movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Let's move on. It is time for Movies and Booze. We are joined once again by Esther McCarthy and Tomás Clancy. Esther, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. What a lovely clear good. Nine. We've discovered we're on Skype or some yokey. Yeah, some yokey like.
And you must be so happy right now because you've probably said testicle about 40 times in the last 20 minutes.
I have, yes. And no, actually, the difficulty is saying testicle festival. Because you want to say testicle, festicle. I don't know what a festicle is. Maybe they should have just called it festicle for short. Really, that would have made it easier and more fun for everybody. Now, obviously, we can't be talking about, as with last week, movies in cinemas. So at least one of the movies we're going to be talking about is a movie that should have been in a cinema but isn't.
Yes, as we talked about Carmen Horses a few weeks ago and how unlucky that Irish film's release was, opening as it did just 4 days, I think, before all the cinemas had closed down. But what we have here is another Irish film that's really, really been hit badly. And it's a cracker again. It's Vivarium. It's a thriller, a sci-fi thriller. It's very singular, very unique. From a director by the name of Lorcan Finnegan. And it's going basically, with a release like this, the media has been all done. It got its, big high profile premiere as opening night of the Dublin International Film Festival about a month ago now, or several years as it's now become known in events since. And the spend has been made, I suppose the plans have been made, and they've just decided to go straight to the various rental platforms with this. So it won't be getting a theatrical release, unfortunately. But it's a really cracker of a movie, I suppose, brand new for people who are getting tired of watching the same olds and looking for something new to watch over the weekend. And on various platforms, including the Irish rental platform Volta, for $4.99. So it's pretty much a bargain.
And is the Volta one the cheapest one?
It can vary. I only found this out actually when I was looking at pricing. Various platforms can charge various prices, so it's worth shopping around first of all. But Volta is $4.99, and it is $11.99 to rent or to keep.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So I mean, I think Volta might be the and Volta you're not paying an ongoing subscription for. You just like book in and you pay per film kind of thing.
You pay by the movie. They have a great back catalogue of Irish cinema, and they've also got some really, really good world cinema, international cinema.
Right, and Timmy Failure. What's that now?
Well, this is, I think a lot of Irish families signed up to Disney Plus this week when it launched on Tuesday. And this is, when you've gone beyond all the Marvels and the Pixars and that incredible back catalogue they have, there are lots of original films in there as well, and original series. So I thought I'd have a look through some of those and try and find a little gem for families at the weekend. And Timmy Failure, Mistakes Were Made is really good. Directed and written by, of all people, Tom McCarthy, who directed Spotlight, the Oscar-winning film, and decided he wanted to have a go at doing something just totally different, based on the first of a very popular and successful series of books geared towards children about a little boy who kind of disappears into his imagination, I suppose. And he has this kind of vivid imagination that he runs a detective agency without his family's knowledge, basically, and he's investigating all these crimes. And it's quite sweet and quite funny and quite ironic, which you don't often get in kids' films. There's a nice little kind of loose irony going through it, which I kind of enjoyed. So I think this would be a nice one for older kids at the weekend.
Right, so Tomás, we're going to try and get work our way through three wines. It's a three-wine day, I feel.
It is a three-wine day, and in fact, and with a nod out to a fourth, another one of the high alcohol people who are making a fantastic spirit sanitizer, and that's Salt Hill, the Salt Hill Distillery in Galway, Then Rastau, Domaine Saint-Gaëlle, a Rastau wine from the Rhône Valley. Then Cellar de Jean de Ardier, which is a Mâcon village from Burgundy. And then finally Cepa Lebrel, a Rioja. So Rioja, Burgundy, Rastau and Salt Hill Galway. The four sort of epic sort of corners of the drinking world. Covered in one interesting move, I hope, this afternoon.
And a couple of questions for you. Having a digital disco with friends later, bought a bottle of Whispering Angel Rosé to have during it, but unsure what snacks to pair with it. Any suggestions?
Oh, my goodness. The Whispering Angel is fantastic. It's beautiful, really, with prosciutto. So it's something, it's lovely with ham, cold ham. And again, that's something nice and neat for your disco. So you don't want to pair it with anything that's sloppy or requires a spoon or something else in your hand. So if you can go over and get a sort of a small handful of prosciutto, boomph, in it goes. And again, it works a bit like chilled fino. Some very nice, particularly like Whispering Angel from the south of France, where they're kind of spicy. The salted almonds root is also very good. Works very well for that. So I think easy salted almonds. I'm trying to think of the music there, but it's maybe Funkadelic Parliament, Weirdness with your spicy salted almonds would do the trick.
Right. Okay. That sounds like a great combination. Except I don't know. Will she be by herself drinking the Whisper? I know it should be linked digitally to other people, but keep that in mind. You can't share it with people.
It's from a distance, I'd have to say. Yes, that is the problem. But that's one of the things that you can do. You can talk about what taste you're getting and what music you enjoy in this kind of distal way. And I think it's going to be bringing lots of interesting, you know, this horrifying world that we're going through now at the moment is just relaunching all kinds of strange things. That's one of them. But when I hear Esther talking about Volta and about the different platforms, it seems like we're going back to a richer kind of a film world that we had when we had video shops. So that you don't sign up to them. There's kind of a video shop that kind of was a specialist in sort of sci-fi, another one was a specialist in cowboy movies or in foreign movies. And you go along and you can either buy them for your €12 or you can rent them for your €4 or €5. It brings, you know, real depth in a way that when you sign up to Netflix, you have to go through everything and you feel committed to them because you're paying that sort of €14 a month and you don't feel you can expand your interests in a kind of a diverse sort of way, which you can going to somewhere like Volta and these places.
You're going to be shocked by this text, though, Tomás. Kay says, okay. I am sick of wine. I didn't think it was possible, but I've had too much of it over the quarantine period. It all tastes the same to me now. Is there a drink Tomás can recommend as a form of palate cleanser, perhaps, to get me back appreciating it again?
Well, I think, first of all, I am shocked to my very core in a kind of a Bronte-esque way. I'm accelerating my fan right now in front of myself. It is the issue with it is if you're looking to if you're buying, and I think people are buying, for example, they're buying not buying mixed cases. They're getting something delivered which is the same wine. So they're getting six bottles of Mâcon, and that's a very convenient way of doing it. But most of the shops now realise that is actually going to be problematical. So nearly all of the shops, and including the online businesses like Wines on Wines Direct and WineOnline.ie, they're allowing you to pick six completely separate wines. And I think that's the way forward. So don't fall into the trap of buying six Mâcons because you think the first one was nice, second one was okay, third one, I could drift away from it now. So that's the way. Be disciplined and sit down and pick your way through six separate wines before you hit click to purchase under those circumstances. I would do.
Excellent. Are the off licenses still open? By the way, the independent off license. Yeah, so good. That's just a few people are tasting it, worrying about that.
No, they're still open, and most of them are now offering a fantastic to your boot service. So you ring ahead and say, "Listen, I'd like a bottle of X, Y, or Z." You pay for it using, over the phone using the credit card. You turn up in your car. They have gloves on. They open the boot pop the bottle of wine into the boot, wipe the hand, your handle clean, and off you go. So it's a zero contact purchase thing as well. So very clever.
Right, let's move on to innovative. Let's move on to our first wine, Tomas. What is it?
Very good. Well, we have two wines today that come from Lidl. And the first of those that we're looking at is Sepa Lebrel. So that's the name of the actual winery. So it's Lebrel. And it's a Rioja Reserva from 2014. To be a Rioja Reserva, what you're looking at is you've got to be a year in barrel and then a couple of years in bottle. We're looking for, it's pre-aged. They're putting the money into it. So instead of you buying a brand new wine, which they've just finished 2018, you're able to buy a wine from 2014 or 2015 so that it's actually, it's kind of softened up already. They've invested in that for you. And that's a way of getting very, very mature wine at probably the most reasonable price. The one, the Sepa Lebrel from Rioja, from Lidl, is €8.49. That is a shockingly good price. And I think really what's going on here is that Lidl and indeed Aldi, but Lidl in particular, are putting themselves in this position of being, they're emerging as negociants. So instead of being people who are having somebody come to them and saying, hi, I'm Chateau de so-and-so, could you sell my wine? They're doing it the other way. They're being like negociants were in the old days, which are big firms, which go out to Rioja and they say, hi, we can take all the wines you can make. We'd like to spend €9, €8, €7, €6. What can you give us for €8 or €9? And that's a guaranteed price for that wine, and they can take a good amount of them. Now, you can only do that when you have real scale, you know, when you have Lidl with a shop in every country in the world, but at this particular moment, every county in Ireland. And they're able to do that. It's very attractive wine. This Rioja has been through the mill. They started off as being a remote district in the sort of 19th century, which was very far from anywhere. They made rustic wines. They were up the side of mountains from the Sierra Cantabria down from the Bay of Biscay, just at the corner with France, just there is where they are. And these rustic wines sold reasonably well, but to a local market, not getting out of any sort of decent prices. Then along came this wonderful disaster for Rioja, which was a huge bug, a plague called phylloxera. It destroyed wines everywhere in Europe, and basically they managed to survive because they didn't know what was killing, you know, how phylloxera ran, or how you could kill it. They couldn't actually find any sort of cure for it. What they found out was that it couldn't, it's a little bug, it couldn't work its way very effectively through sandy and limestone soils. So you got these and that were high and remote. So Rioja had all, it ticked all the boxes. And what it did, it became a substitute for Bordeaux in the 19th century. And then it became, that's why it became suddenly out of nowhere. You don't hear about Rioja for 1,000 years, and then suddenly at the end of the 19th century, it's being talked about in the same way as Chateau Lafite or Chateau Latour. Then a way of getting around all this was discovered, where they grafted vines, local European vines onto American rootstock, and basically saved the whole of Europe's business. They started again, and everyone planted. It took them 5 or 10 years to get back on their feet. But then Rioja, which had set itself up to be a supplier of great, expensive wine, found itself having overspent on the beautiful capital things of the great presses and the great vineyards and all the people. And so they had to sell it for no money at all. And that's what they spent the last 100 years doing, basically trying to sell this very beautiful wine at undervalue. It's really, really undervalued. Mm-hmm. Not quite as undervalued as this, but normally, you know, something that would be a winery called the Rioja Alta, which would be of a sort of a €50 kind of price. If you went to buy that quality of wine in Tuscany or in Bordeaux, that would be €100 wine. What they've done in Lidl is they've been unashamed in deciding to go for price and getting us something that is fresh, fruity, very ripe, really spicy, and is saying, we're not overly interested in the brand here. We're interested in providing you for a very attractive wine at a good price. And if you can live with that, if you can live without having the brand to back you up in your choice, you can be sure that people will appreciate that what you've done is you've sacrificed brand image for a beautiful wine for them. At a very, very good price for yourself. So it's a brilliant wine.
Can't go wrong with that. Right, what movie would you like to do first, Esther?
Let's talk about Vivarium, Sean, will we?
Okay, all right. We'll talk about Vivarium after this break.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
I'm Gemma. This is my boyfriend, Tom.
Hey, it's up.
Gemma and Tom. Lovely to meet you.
It's lovely to meet you too, Martin.
Yonder is a wonderful development. Both tranquil and practical, it has all you'd need and all you'd want. And as for the prices, it's no wonder these houses are getting snapped up. But there's more to Yonder than what you see in these images. We've lovely people, all sorts of people ready to move in. It's going to be a diverse community. Something different, a nice blend.
Where's it located?
Near enough. And far enough. Just the right distance.
There you go. That's Vivarium, which is on will be on various platforms. Is already, I think, on various platforms. You can actually get it on Volta. That's where I did check this morning. So, yeah. Technically speaking, is it a science fiction movie or a fantasy movie? Or it kind of looked from the trailer, it looks kind of a bit Terry Jonesy.
Yeah, I viewed it as a comedy, actually, a pitch black comedy, and I had a lot of fun with it because of that. And I think people will view it in different ways, which is what's one of the many things that's special about it. But that great performance there was a supporting performance from an actor by the name of Jonathan Aris. He is the estate agent, and he's, you know, trying to charm this couple into coming to this anonymous housing estate called Yonder to view a house. But he's one of these people whose smile holds just a little too long. Mm. And it's quite a nuanced and slightly over the top, not over the top, but I suppose a slightly arch performance. So he kind of had me laughing about 10, 15 minutes into the film. And I realised this was going to be a scathing put down of the ideal suburban life as a black comedy. And it goes to quite dark places in the end as well. It's, you know, it's a film that sticks to its premise, I would say. But I kind of thought it was gas, to be honest. I had a lot of fun with it. Imogen Poots and Jesse Eisenberg are this kind of smug young couple. She's a teacher, he works in the grounds, and it's set in Ireland, of course, even though we have an international cast here. And
is it recognisably Ireland?
Yeah, it's its own world because other than the very opening scenes, it's set in this estate, you know, and it's partly, but the early scenes are set in Ireland or Irish voices, but the part of the production was actually shot in Belgium as well. Hmm. It's co-production. But so they're this kind of smug couple and they don't want to have kids yet, but they do fancy the idea of a house, but the idea of kind of a suburban box, I suppose, is a little beneath them. You know, they're kind of a bohemian couple, this couple, and they kind of want something, you know, more unique than that, I suppose. But they're persuaded to go to this estate and have a look at this house, and they have kind of a little bit of a sneery viewing. They don't like the identical look of it, and the fact that it's a huge, vast estate. The visuals in this are great, actually. They're very otherworldly. When they're in the back garden, they turn around and the guy who's showing them the house has disappeared. So they have to try and get out of the housing estate on their own. And no matter what corners they take, where they turn, how much they blame each other as driving, they keep coming back to number 9. So they are, you know, then it turns into kind of a bit of a supernatural horror, I guess. And they start, they're trapped in this house. They get food delivered to them every day. They even try and set fire to the house one day to break the pattern, only to wake up the next morning and the house to be perfect again. So it's, you know, you're really into fantastical stuff here. Mm-hmm. And then one day, along with their food parcel, a box arrives containing a baby boy, and it's left outside the house.
Yeah. This is Amazon Prime nightmare now.
And so relatable at the moment, two people who can't escape from their house, huh? Mm. But the box containing the baby is left outside the house with the message, raise the child and be released. So they both respond very differently to this. The child is not your average child, let's say, and he tends to like scream really loudly when he doesn't get his way, and it's kind of a very exaggerated version of, you know, fear of parenthood. So you're not only getting the fear of suburbia here, Lorcan Finnegan is notching it up a bit and giving you that kind of, you know, fear of parenthood and that sense, I'm sure, that most parents will relate to of why did we ever want this? Why did we ever wish for this? In the days when it's really hard. But the child's growing up really fast and at a rate of knots. So Imogen Poots' character, they both kind of, I suppose, approach their situation in different ways. She tries to comply, I guess, and nurture her mothering side and raise the child in the hope that she'll be released, that she'll eventually be released. And Jesse Eisenberg's character is kind of fighting to the bitter end. He starts digging in the garden to, you know, deciding that somehow, after a really chilling scene actually where he climbs up to the roof of the house and all he can see as far as the eye can see is the same houses, the same suburbia. He can't see anything else. And the sky kind of has a fake look to it as well. So vivarium means it's an enclosure or container where animals are put in to be studied. So that's kind of where Lorcan Finnegan's going with this, I suppose, and keeping, they're kept under semi-natural conditions for observation is how the term is defined. So he digs and digs. She tries to comply, but absolutely hates this child, or is it a child even? And they are, yeah, I thought it was like, it's kind of like talking heads once in a lifetime, you know, where the characters turn around at one point and go, how did I get here?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's telling the story through genre, so some people will see it as a supernatural thriller or as a horror, but I just thought it was an absolute pitch black comedy about wishing for this ideal life and then kind of being trapped in it. And I thought it was really interesting. It maybe loses pace a little in the second hour. But I was so, it's because it's a high concept film, I suppose there's always the risk of that, you know, and it's a one idea movie, really, even though there are great performances and writing within that. So some people might feel it loses its way a bit in the second hour. But as I say, I thought it was so funny by that point. And he's not afraid. They're not afraid to do horrible things to their characters. So there's a kind of a maniacal kind of sense of fun in that as well.
Yeah. It reminds me from what your description a bit of the old Patrick McGowan series The Prisoner, where he kept escaping and then ended up in his bed every time on the island.
That's true. It is, and it's, I suppose it's kind of an interesting kind of character study as well, in the way they respond differently. And you know, you're waiting, as I'm sure a lot of people feel, like trapped in their homes at the moment, when are they going to start turning on each other? You know?
And that's why I don't know if everybody will want to watch this film. I give them ideas.
It's there's no pandemic at play here. It's a very different film, but the conceit at the heart of it is the timing is absolutely mad, quite frankly. I liked this a lot. I like that Irish filmmakers are telling stories through genre now as well. I think it's a really clever way of doing something, maybe telling a story that's been told before, but doing it in a completely different way, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to Black 47, where they did the famine story, but they turned it into a revenge thriller, really, and stuff like that. I really like where all these new filmmakers are going at the moment with that kind of, with genre, because it sells internationally as well. It's a really good way of pitching something like this, but it's science fiction, you know. It's something, Hole in the Ground last year as well, which was a very Irish story. Seanan Kerslake playing an Irish mother whose son was lost, but again, told true genre, told as a horror film, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a good time. It's hard luck for this film. It's hard luck that this film isn't getting a theatrical release, but it's well worth your fiver tonight, I would say, or over the weekend.
James says, my wife and I are fit to kill each other at the minute. The kids are being very demanding and we are sniping at each other, something fierce. I'm going to run to the supermarket soon and buy a let's just get on as it's tough enough and maybe we can make up later if you're on for it. But if you're too tired, I get it. Maybe we can try again tomorrow night type of wine. What would Tomás recommend? I don't know if you can fit all that on a label.
It's a very tricky one for a label, but frankly, what that is, you want to get out there and get a fabulous Chardonnay from Chile. Go and get the Lleida Valley or Pinot, the Lleida Valley Pinot Noir. In fact, I think it's probably even better. It has a seductive quality to it. When you initially open it, it's really opulent on the fruit and it's really communicating exactly what we're thinking. But on the other hand, it's a little lighter than you might imagine. It's not a 14 or 15% sort of a blockbuster either. So it's there saying, you know, maybe, yeah, but
maybe
later.
A few people texting in as well. Tomás asking, could you repeat the name of the Rioja that you were speaking about earlier?
Certainly. It's called Cepa Lebrel. So L-E-B-R-E-L. So Lebrel is the thing, and you're going to be looking for, it's got a big sort of thing saying Rioja Reserva. That's its main thing. So if in Lidl, the Rioja Reserva in Lidl, and it has its sideways label, which then has the Lebrel on it, Cepa Lebrel.
Patrick says, my daughter had to cancel the wedding at home, and now I'm left with enough wine for 120 guests in my house. I haven't yielded to temptation yet, but it's getting more difficult, says Patrick. Yeah. You think over time, really, people would understand, kind of. Connor says, when we were last in Lanzarote after a meal, my girlfriend and I were given a complimentary glass of what they called pink Moscato. It was sparkling, very sweet and fantastic. I don't know anything when it comes to wine, but I can't find anything called that in the shops here. What brands would have it here and where could I get some?
You're not going to find that, unfortunately. That's a beauty. They have them. They're not cheap and cheerful. They're reasonably priced and cheerful. But there are several. Shops such as 64 Wines and Green Man Wines and Mitchell's, who are specialising these days in wines from the Canaries, from Lanzarote, from volcanic and from islands. And Seven Fuentes, which is sheaves or windbreakers. Though that's a really good wine, and they have a saline quality to them. They're red wines. They've Lista Negra and Lista Blanco is what they're made from. They've been isolated from the rest of Europe for a long time, so it's very hard to find your pink one. But try for the red, and you might be surprised. A lighter red from 64 Wines, they'll be able to show you they've about three or four. And you could find yourself onto something nice there.
Somebody wants to know, the Rioja wine again that you were speaking about, is it vegan? Please say yes. Does it have like lumps of pork floating in it or anything?
No, it's not necessary. Now, see, the problem with vegan is it's a really important sort of element to it. Because the issue with vegan wines is how they make them. And how you're fining the wines. So to clean the wines up, people put in egg. They put in egg white into it, and you get this kind of egg white sort of element to it that gives you a nice polish. So it doesn't. I'm not aware of it being vegan. It's not pressing itself as vegan. But there are several vegan Riocas down there, and they will say it on the back. They'll have a large V with a tick on the front of it. Yeah. Sorry about that.
So our second wine of the day is what, Tomás?
Second wine of the day, the next one is from Lidl, another one from Lidl. This is the Cellar de Saint-Jean, and it's a Mâcon Village. So this is a wine from southern Burgundy. And again, like I was saying with their approach to Rioja, they're doing exactly what people would have done as négociants. So who are the people making the wine here? The people making the wine here are small farmers. They're kind of like cooperative winemakers, really often collectives. So it's a way for small farmers to get in. So Mâcon Village, if I have just a 40-acre plot and I make 1,000 bottles, I can't sell that for any money at all to anyone. And it's, you know, as somebody who's making very little money, it's hard for me to get to Dublin and go around a few shops and see, would you take my wine? But I can sell it to Lidl turning up on my door, and they'll take all 1,000 wines off me. They will look to get a basic minimum standard. They'll back blend to this kind of a quality level that they're looking for. And you can get, you know, really solid levels of quality out of the little Mâcon village. Mâcon is the most southern part of Burgundy, and it goes from the little city of Mâcon across to the abbey, the little town of Cluny, where there's a huge abbey. And this is where Burgundy begins, but it's not a very attractive or it's not a very beautiful place. It has one beautiful hill, which is the Rocket Sultry, which I've talked about before. Mm. But the rest of it is kind of a bit rolling, a bit sort of average countryside. So they're not sort of being able to tip themselves through and make money out of Uno tourism, as you are in Beaune or in Gevrey-Chambertin, where people will come just to sit in a village cafe that says Moray Saint-Denis, buy a bottle of 100 euro wine to take home with them and have a little meal. You know, they have it everywhere, whereas unfortunately the people in Mâcon, they've got very plain little towns. I'm not, you know, I'm trying to think of one that I'm not going to defame anyone here in Ireland, but so it's tricky, but shall we say Kinnegad. A beautiful, beautiful town.
We'd like to apologise to all our listeners. Yeah.
on the road to everywhere is what we like to say. It's on the road to absolutely everywhere. But it wouldn't be the first place you would think of. Where they do have good, they've good soil, they've good farming that around there. And here's a way of doing this. So that's our second one. Now, again, 8.49. Mm. And this is what they're doing. This is a sub 9 euro pricing, which has become a very attractive position for pricing in Ireland over the last 6 or 8 months, and I would say definitely over the last few months. So I think if anyone's going to be able to keep a tight lid on pricing, it will be the Lidls and the rest of these groups which are parsing this down, and they're able to do it well. And I'd have to say it's a really solid, well-made wine. It doesn't have a big second act. There's no sort of some of the very best Mâcons have a little sort of tangerine element to it. What you've got with this is you've got sort of a flicker of orange, a sort of zesty orange peel at the end of it, which is very nice, attractive. Lemon, lime to start with, a little light zesty acidity, touch of orange, and you're out the far side. For 8.49, chilled, just a beautiful place to be.
No harm at all. Right, we do have to take a break. One more wine, one more. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. The question for Tomás, can certain white wines go off? I have a bottle of Domaine Mass de la Tour. It's a blend from 2015. Is it still okay?
It should be from 2015. That's not a real problem at all. Yes, white wine can go off. There's no problem about it. It can oxidize like red wines. But what you get is you get this kind of nuttiness, and you get a sort of a fragile deposit of often maybe white crystals. They're not in any way problematical. But you get this. So white wine can go off. It shouldn't really have gone off from 2015 unless it was a bottle, say, left in the back of your car and got very hot and very cold over a few days, that can accelerate. It's called you get this thing called premox as well. So the answer is yes, it can.
Right. Okay. Good stuff.
But it's unlikely. It's unlikely.
Unlikely. Right. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Timmy Failure. Here's a clip.
You're late again. Oh, and Failure, it's your turn to take care of Hammy Ham. Pick him up at Maxine's house tomorrow after school.
Hi, Timmy. Can you keep a secret? Sure he's dead?
He hasn't moved for 3 days.
Note to file. Possible homicide. I'll need a shoebox.
Why? What are you gonna do?
Take the body to the lab. Open an investigation. This'll probably hit the papers.
It's not my fault. I love animals. I'm on the planning committee for Animal Awareness Month.
You should consider stepping down till this blows over, which it probably won't.
Right, that's Timmy Failure. And I suppose, first off, Esther, where can people watch this?
This is on Disney Plus, which launched in Ireland on Tuesday, giving much needed respite to parents and families all over the country, I think. And it's the only place you can see it because it's exclusively, it's like Disney's Netflix original, I suppose. It's a film exclusively made for the Disney Plus platform. And I was really intrigued because it's It's Tom McCarthy writing and directing, and it's his follow-up to Spotlight, the Oscar-winning, very serious and earnest and wonderful film about the Washington Post's whistleblowing of the Catholic Church. So it's not a follow-up you'd expect, I suppose, from a director like this, but it turns out, in fact, that he brought it to Disney, that he read the first book on which the series is based, a book by... popular, well-selling books by Stephen Pastis, and just really took to the kind of quirky, deadpan and witty boy named Timmy Failure, and actually brought it to Disney, who and then he's making his next project, and they're just it got delayed, and they said let's get to this, let's do it. So Timmy Failure is he has this vivid imagination. He sees himself as a savvy detective who operates a partnership named Total Failure, who is a 1,500-pound polar bear named Total, who thankfully we get to see on screen as well. And he's kind of an outsider in his school, and he has, you know, he's got a lot of family stuff going on, and I suppose being this, you know, going into this. Idea of being a kid detective gives him the freedom and the confidence to think big, so he's kind of going around the city with a giant polar bear, solving crimes, and you know,
as you do, yeah,
getting away from his life with his kind of overburdened mother and her new boyfriend and his teacher Mr. Crocus, who he really doesn't like. It's lovely. It's a lovely deadpan performance as well from a young actor by the name of Winslow Fegley, which people who love Pete's Dragon, I know there's a lot of people out there who love Pete's Dragon, will know. And this, I just think ultimately it doesn't quite deliver on the wealth of promise that it offers, you know, given the filmmaker involved, given the ambition and the originality of the story. It just doesn't, it feels a little too conventional for what potentially could have been delivered. But it's a whole lot of fun. You know, it has a lovely ironic tone. I can see maybe the over-8s really getting on board with it. You know, reminiscent, of course, if you like the Artemis Fowl books by Owen Colfer.
Right,
A little bit reminiscent of that, in that it's a cheeky kid detective in a kind of a fantastical world, you know. It's good. It's good. And you know, I know everyone's probably revisiting all the classics and having a Marvel weekend who's registered for Disney, but if you kind of look under the bonnet of what they have on the site, there's a lot of good original stuff there as well, so I kind of look forward to exploring that more over the coming weeks, I think.
Right, so in the last minute or so we have left, Tomás, tell us about our final wine today.
Very quickly, it's called Domaine Saint-Gaëtan, and it's from Rastau, which is in the very far south of the Rhône, near Châteauneuf-du-Pape. I love anything to do with Rastau, because the first time I went there, they had a village fete where they had made a 20-foot-tall butterfly out of various cuts of charcuterie and meat, and I have never been able to separate 20-foot-tall butterflies made out of meat from really good Rastau. This is an excellent one from Searson's Wine Merchants for around £21.50, and it's called Domaine Saint-Gaëtan.
Excellent Boom. Stuff. Tomás, thank you very much for all of that. Thanks, of course, to Esther McCarthy as well. Ivan's up next on Newstalk. Our production team today, Claire Collins, Philip Kelly, Anne-Marie Kane, Simon Tierney and Aisling O'Reilly. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2 o'clock. Have a lovely weekend. movie after this.